Hi, everybody. My name is Dennis, and I'm in recovery from codependence.
My name is Ming Wei. I'm a recovering codependent.
Welcome to our meeting on what steps 1, 2, and 3 mean to me. The meeting goes for 1.25 hours and finishes at 4:15. And just a reminder to turn off your mobile phone. We will now read the CODA preamble.
The preamble of Codependence Anonymous. Codependence Anonymous is a fellowship of people whose common purpose is to develop healthy relationships. The only requirement for membership is a desire for healthy and loving relationships. We gather together to support and share with each other in a journey of self-discovery, learning to love the self. Living the program allows each of us to become increasingly honest with ourselves about our personal histories and our own codependent behaviors. We rely upon the 12 steps and the 12 traditions for knowledge and wisdom. These are the principles of our program and guides to developing honest and fulfilling relationships with ourselves and others. In CODA, we each learn to build a bridge to a higher power of our own understanding, and we allow others the same privilege. This renewal process is a gift of healing for us. By actively working the program of Codependence Anonymous, we can each realize a new joy, acceptance, and serenity in our lives.
A guide to sharing. It is important for each of us to speak as we are able. Many of us find speaking among others, especially strangers, a very difficult task. It's the intention of every CODA member and group to support every person at every CODA meeting. Nothing that is shared is unimportant or stupid, and there are no requirements to share. The sharing of our experience is done with I statements. This means that we tell only of our own experience. The use of the words you and we is discouraged. CODA has one paramount rule during sharing: no crosstalk. This means any verbal or physical response to what someone else is saying or has said during their turn to speak. We give the person sharing our full and uncritical attention. We also do not mention other CODA members during our share. We can only share our own experience, strength and hope, and do not give advice without a person's agreement. This also applies after the meeting. In the spirit of anonymity, we ask that members do not give their last name, identify their professions, or refer to non-CODA literature during the meeting.
Traditions. We will now read the CODA traditions. The 12 traditions of Codependence Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CODA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving higher power, as expressed to our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for membership in CODA is a desire for healthy and loving relationships. 4. Each group should remain autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or CODA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to other codependents who still suffer. 6. A CODA group ought to never endorse, finance, or lend the CODA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. 7. Every CODA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Codependence Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. CODA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. CODA has no opinion on outside issues, hence the CODA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundations of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The focus of this meeting is on the first three steps. We will now read the long form of the first three steps from the CODA literature.
Step 1. We admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. On powerlessness. Until now, we had applied self-control, obsessiveness, and our own clouded thinking to our problems of living. When our relationships broke down, many of us just tried harder, applying the arsenal of misinformation with a vengeance. Our self-will took many forms. We were overbearing, we were people-pleasers, we conformed. We rebelled, we blamed. We hurt ourselves and we hurt others. Some of us had to go to the edge of insanity or death before we were willing to admit our powerlessness. Where was success? On unmanageability. Chances are, by the time we reached CODA, our lives were out of control. The coping skills we had relied on for a lifetime were no longer working. We were the victims of a compulsive way of behaving, so subtly powerful and damaging that no ordinary means could break it. Our lives were truly unmanageable. It was at this point that our old ideas began to crumble and we became open to the possibility that there might be another way.
Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Came to believe. In the beginning, we came to believe by attending meetings and listening. We heard others as they described a relationship with a higher power. We noticed that those who maintained a regular connection with this power experienced what we sought. Recovery. Restore us to sanity. With the help of others in the program, we began to look more clearly at our own behavior. We discovered a great truth in step two, that continuing to act in a self-destructive manner, no matter how well-meaning we believed we were, was insane. And the belief that we could control it in our own way was equally insane. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Made a decision. If we believed we were powerless and that a higher power could transform us, why not accept it? Why not give God a chance where we had failed? Besides, what did we have to lose but our misery? Our will and our lives. Our old idea called out to us to return to self-will. Once again, we attempted to play God in our lives and the lives of others. It was this experience that led us to acknowledge that this program of recovery was not a flash in the pan, something nice to do on a pleasant afternoon. It represented our opportunity to live as whole human beings. And if we wanted it, we would need the willingness to go to any length, even if it meant asking God for help more than once.
Our first leading share will be from Petiri from Wollongong.
Hi, my name's Petiri. I'm recovering from codependency.
Hi.
Step one, admitting I was powerless over other people and that my life had become unmanageable. I just want to share many examples of unmanageability in my own life, or some. So I come from a family where my dad has bipolar 1 and he's a sex addict and a victim survivor of incest with his grandmother. And he also was and is very violent. So that was my childhood with that dad. And then my mum is autistic, and so she had very strong ideas about the right way to do everything and the right way to be. So that was my childhood. I was the eldest of four and had these two parents who weren't really managing things and felt that that was my job to step in and kind of fill the gaps because things were quite messy. A feeling that I never did anything right was kind of the message I got from my mum. And an example of unmanageability was I decided as a young adult to try and repair my relationship with my dad, and I made a date with him to go out and see a movie. He forgot about the date. He was late. He went shopping. Part of his bipolar was lots of like excessiveness, so he came back with loads of stuff and I was so angry that he was late, and so I actually tried to kind of punch him and hit him and let him know I was furious with him. I just really wanted him not to be how he was. Another example of unmanageability was just the way I chose life partners. I really was trying to fix my mum and my dad. So I played that out in the form of marriages. I was really, really stuck and quite obsessed and fixated. Lots of blame, lots of resentments. I basically married my mum and tried to fix her in that marriage to this man, which was a hopeless task. And I divorced after being with him for 20 years, had four kids together. Then I married again, and this time I married my dad, tried to fix him, hopeless. So basically, my life was all about believing foolishly that I did have power over others. And trying to have control over other people just makes you completely miserable and brings so much chaos and unmanageability into your life. And that's what I was living. I thought I was super responsible and capable, but actually I was chronically irresponsible. I became over 100 kilos. I severely neglected my health. I didn't really live in my own body. I lived away from my body, which was a strategy to cope with all the violence. I remember buying paper plates because I couldn't handle washing my dishes. I would have a mountain of dishes in the kitchen that were dirty, and I didn't know how you'd deal with that. So people would come over and think that I was sorting the cupboards out, but I was just not able to wash my dishes. Chaos. I was very needy. I was desperate, intense, very demanding. I wanted others to meet my needs. I constantly inserted myself into other people's lives, took on their responsibilities. I was very tired and busy helping other people. Mountains of unwanted advice I would just give all the time, compulsively. I used to feel that I didn't even have time to go to the toilet or have a shower. That's a terrible way to live. It's such a relief to admit that I'm actually powerless over other people, and now I experience my life as manageable. Step two, coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I really needed a divine intervention, as we all do. The sanity I longed for, I began to see that it could only come from God. I really was a crazy maker, and when I don't practice recovery, I can easily become a crazy maker again. So I'm less lonely now. I'm not alone in this journey because I have God in the picture. He's a sanity maker, and he brings the rest, the calm, the joy and the healing that I really desire. Step three, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. The life-changing moment was when I realized that I'm actually not God and other people aren't God. So that was revelatory to realize that only God is God. I basically put everyone in the wrong spot, and that's been my CODA recovery testimony, is learning to put everyone in the right spot. So God's in the God spot now, and I'm in the me spot, other people in the other people spot. And me and other people are imperfect but precious, whereas God is perfect and precious. So it's kind of working a lot more smoothly since I've done that. So it's like a new posture to make a decision to turn and to accept that God cares and he knows how to really care for me. It's been like so radically different. I think the biggest thing from those first three steps for me is that I'm not alone, that God knows the way and that he cares for me, and that really matters. That's what really matters. I'm only free when I let go, when I admit that I'm powerless over other people. And then I get restored to sanity. I really can't recognize my life now compared to before CODA. Like, I live quite differently. There's a lot more peace in my life. There's more laughter. There's less pressure. I'm not rushing as much. I'm not exhausted all the time. I'm actually not exhausted today, which is really lovely to be here with you, not exhausted. I've actually this year achieved three of the items on my bucket list, which is incredible. I went to Egypt. I went to India. I bought a brand new car, 2024 model. I've never done that, and that was on my bucket list. So this is the promises. This is the fruit of working the program. And God's care is what guides my life now. It feels like I've come back home to myself, to my body. I live inside my body now, and I finally accept myself, and I accept others more than I've ever done. I'm more in tune with what I want. I've stopped going to the butchers to buy bread. I've recognized I actually need bread and I need to find where to buy it, and that God is the baker. So that's really what CODA recovery has done for me with those first three steps. Thanks.
The meeting is now open for sharing on this topic or any aspect of our recovery. Please raise your hand if you would like to share, and we will choose speakers to come to the front and speak.
Hi, I'm Linda, recovering codependent. Yeah, I felt compelled to speak on this. When I first came to CODA and I heard step one, I could grapple with the idea that I was powerless over others, but I really felt angry at this idea that my life was unmanageable, because I felt like screaming, "You got no idea what I'm managing." But actually what I was doing was just holding my head above water barely in a really toxic situation and thinking that that was success, that that was something to aspire to. And it's taken me actually a while in CODA to fully see just how unmanageable my life really was. And I was just thinking the other day about how I don't seem to have like drama or crises in my life anywhere near as much as I used to before CODA, but I never realised that I was a part of that, or at least the people I was a part of it and the people I chose to be around were also similarly addicted to chaos and drama. I just thought these things kept happening to me that would, you know, consume me for days, fixing some problem, dealing with something unforeseen. But it's just incredible the difference now to the peace that I know in my life. My life just overall seems to go very smoothly thanks to working the steps, and I can see so clearly now when it becomes unmanageable. But I just had never known any different. I didn't know what to compare it to. And then working step two, gosh, that's one I feel like I just constantly am working, and I guess I always will be in recovery. It still surprises me how much I can believe those thoughts in my head that are my old ways of thinking, and be so certain that the way I see a situation, my thoughts about what's happening, what I think other people will think, that I feel so certain about it. The most helpful thing I've found in working step two is to talk to someone else and to hear another perspective, and that really starts to take me out of my old ways of thinking. Yeah, reflecting all of those deep childhood patterns that I had. And when I can't speak to someone, what I do find helpful is just to think, taking the same situation, what are the many, you know, what are some of the other ways someone else could view the same situation, and trying to get a couple of different options, because that also helps me start to come out of it when I just can start to let go of the idea that my thought is the one and only way of seeing a situation. And inevitably that's also catastrophic and painful. Step three. Yeah, this has been a really hard year for me. Ever since I joined CODA, happening in my life, really big changes. And whenever I just practice handing over to my higher power, I realise that I am really supported, that things are happening for my own good. And some of the things that happened along the way that I thought weren't what I had in mind, I was resistant and unhappy, they've actually turned out to be real blessings, and I've progressed in my recovery because of them. I think I'll leave it there, but yeah, very grateful for CODA. Thank you.
Matthew, recovering codependent.
Thank you.
So what I've learned from CODA conference today is that I'm a compulsive sharer. Step one, my lives have become unmanageable. So I started coming to CODA because my life had become unmanageable. My partner, who I'd married, this was way before same-sex marriage, was a pot addict. And I thought, oh yeah, this is fine. I don't mind to smoke every now and again. After we got married, my mindset went, oh my God, this is forever. Oh, he's way worse than I thought. Oh my God. This unmanageable is an understatement of the situation. And that, so I started going to CODA. And after a number of years of recovery, I said to him, look, I'm coping now, but there's going to be a point in the future where I'm not going to be coping. And of course, that sent him off the deep end. And he didn't like to hear that. In time, he just gave up. I didn't do anything else. He decided that wherever he was at, that was enough. And to my mind, that was the most miraculous part of recovery for me, that situation resolved without me doing anything really, except, I guess, recovering myself. So eternally grateful for that. Step two, about a higher power. Look, I've really struggled with this. As an atheist, the idea of God, higher power, I really struggled. My higher power is more about, it's obviously not supernatural, it's more about what does the universe want? You know, when I remove my ego and all the shit that's going around in my head, what am I hearing? Through that quietness, that's when I hear the will and what my higher power wants for me, when there is quietness in my head. Step three, made a decision to turn my life over to that. Yeah, look, I've struggled, still struggling with that. Getting to that stillness, hearing that, is not easy. Look, I'm sure everyone understands the same thing. One of the reasons I came today, and one of the reasons I still go to CODA, is to sit down and be still and hear what other people's higher power are saying and hear what mine has to say. And that's why I still come. Thank you.
Oh, Hi. You know, I just had to get up. It's really important, the three steps of being around for a while. Step one, I just had no idea. I knew I was powerless over substance. And that was bad enough. And then just having to concentrate on step one, I was in the problem. Because I just had a mental block, whether it was relationships with women or an expression of feelings for me. I knew that there was definitely something wrong, even people at work that I was working with, I couldn't express what I was feeling. And so I was most definitely in the problem, so I knew I needed this program. If it wasn't for that step, I wouldn't be able to get into this program, because it really broke my denial that I was powerless over others, but I knew I had to put the substances down to be able to look at that, because I thought, well, if I put the alcohol down, I'll be fine, or if it was drugs or alcohol, then I should be fine, I'm sober, right? And I found that I'm just the same. It's like I was still like a dry drunk, so I was still in the problem. So I thought, well, what's going to relieve me of this? Because I've tried everything, I've done everything I can, and to be able to talk about it, I couldn't talk to my family about it. I didn't really have a family affiliation, and I couldn't talk to my close friends because they were similar to me, similar issues to me. Well, that just brought me to step two, because I always had a higher power. I always went to church every Sunday and everything, but I was up here. I was up in my head. It was just what my family wanted me to believe. They believe in a God or believe in a higher power, which I believed, but I didn't really believe from my heart. I started to actually really come to believe in feeling from here rather than here. And that was a hard one, because I knew that I was powerless and I lacked power. And so I came into this program to get more empowered. Step two with me was like the solution. It made me look, well, there may be some hope. Maybe I've got a chance. And so it gave me that. Started thinking about doing meditation and so on. And then the third step was like a decision. So I had to turn my will over. So I had to write down for character defects and the things that I had to turn over to my higher power that I didn't really want anymore in my life. So I knew what to pay for, which really helped me look at my self-will. Looking at it now, I did that a bit further down the chart, but I was able to look at where I was playing God, and it sort of gave me a decision to say, well, I've got to give up my self-will to go back on God's will. And that took me a while to get used to that feeling before I even got through the steps. It was like something lifted, the fog lifted after about a year or two, and I was able to make a decision. And there was a big difference. There was a big difference between self-will and God's will. And I couldn't see it at the time, but I think my brain started at that particular time started to reprogram. And somebody else mentioned it in the fellowship about reprogramming his brain, and I thought, oh, I've already got there. So I knew exactly what he was talking about. It was almost like a calling out of saying, I don't want this anymore. I don't want this. I'm going to conquer this somehow. I started getting my head around it and then started sharing about it. I was able to make that decision, which it's fantastic. I'll go. See ya.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mary. I'm a grateful member of CODA.
Hello, Mary.
I'm from Cromer Sydney Group. And I've been sitting there doing that fight, you know, where it's get up, don't get up, get up, don't get up. The problem for me is that I can't see that. It's too far away. So I've made a few notes. Thinking about step one and powerlessness, I came into 12-step recovery because, like Darlene in her chat this morning, her story was my story. Alcoholism, an ex who was violent. I recognized my unmanageability as soon as I walked into the 12-step room. You know, I was a sobbing mess for a good 6 meetings, which is probably pretty accurate for the beginning of, you know, when you first get into recovery. For me, it was about that letting go of trying to control a situation that was absolutely unmanageable. And since being in CODA, I have to now think about, well, back then I was powerless over the alcohol. In CODA, I have to recognize that I am powerless over situations and people and my children and my relatives. And I'm powerless over institutions and the government. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And those institutions are so, so frustrating. And if I can just loosen my grip a little bit on them and recognize that all things will be revealed and all things will work out for my best interest. And, you know, thinking about that unmanageability, my life was unmanageable from my childhood. Everything in my childhood was chaos and crazy. And I left Canada and I came to Australia. It's like, I'm going to have a new beginning. But guess what was the common denominator in that chaos? Me. I brought everything with me. And in AA, they call it a geographic. I brought all that shit, all that unmanageability, and I brought it into a chaotic relationship. And guess what? I also put it onto my children. And so it wasn't until, so step two, the second part of it, came to believe in a higher power. For me, it's not a Christian God. It's not a higher power. I don't even ask for the higher power to come into my life. And suddenly it's like I get this feeling and it's there speaking to me. And sometimes I think, ah, it's that wise, caring voice of my mother that I remember as a child. But then sometimes I think, oh, you know, it could be something else. I can remember standing with the alcoholic and we're screaming at each other. And suddenly this voice came into my head that said, hey, Mary, I thought you weren't going to do this anymore. And that wasn't my mother. It wasn't a Christian God. It wasn't anything. It was program. It was the higher power acting in my life. And since then, all I got to do, like a previous speaker said, is just stop and breathe. I was saying to someone at lunchtime, for the number of years that you've been in recovery, so for me it's been 12, I get 12 seconds before the unconscious stuff kicks in. If you've been in recovery for 1 year, evidently the theory is you get 1 second before you respond. So the more you do it, the more meetings you attend, the better you get. Yay, there's hope. Okay, number three, will and lives, and the word I've written down is choice. So we made a decision to turn our lives over to the care. And that word decision tells me I have a choice around this. I can choose to step into chaos, or I can choose to say, whoop, not this time, and choose to keep my serenity. Guy came to me today and said, hey, wouldn't Sydney love to run the convention next year? Do I want to step into chaos? I'll put it to the group. It's not my decision. But anyway, the point is that we have choice. And I know I have choice about what I want to step into or not step into. And yay, thank God for that. Thank you.
Hey everybody, my name is Tony. I'm a recovering codependent.
Hi, Tony.
I wanted to open my... I only managed to arrive here about half an hour ago and I really want to feel part of this. I want to open my mouth and share. I'm a member of the 5 p.m. Friday Zoom meeting and resident in Wollongong. I came into CODA about 5 years ago, just before COVID. I'd spent many years in another 12-step program dealing with the most obvious problems in my life, which were drug addiction, and achieved freedom from that. And what I thought was the life of my dreams, which included primarily a relationship with a woman of my dreams who I married and believe that I received both the romantic love that's written about in the songs and unconditional love all tied up in this package of beauty and that my life would be wonderful from there on in. Probably for 20 years or so, I didn't realise how enmeshed we were at the time. I had no idea. I just lived in it. But 25 years later, where I started feeling that love was being withdrawn, I found that I was triggered into behaviour that I never knew that I had. Anger, resentment, real strong control measures or whatever, and I didn't even know where it was coming from. And I was completely powerless over it, and I couldn't see the answer in my other 12-step program. One of the joys of my recovery is I have a brother in England who is a brother in blood and a brother in recovery, in both recoveries, although he's been in CODA a lot longer than I have. And I was over in England and he took me to a CODA meeting and the penny dropped that this was the place where I really needed to deal with this stuff. Since then, I've worked through the steps. I've had a lot of relief. The marriage ended. It wasn't what I wanted, but in many ways, it was probably the best thing. What do I understand by the first step is that I'm powerless over my codependent behaviours that happen automatically when I'm triggered in this sort of chain reaction where there's a trigger, emotion, and all of a sudden I'm acting out. And I'm also powerless over codependent behaviours that just sort of happen naturally because I'm so used to living my life in a way that I'm trying to manipulate others to love me, not just the primary person. It's only in CODA that I learnt about my childhood trauma, which I'd always denied, how I was taught to believe that I would only receive love if I was perfect. And that meant being perfect in the eyes of the person that I wanted the love from. So I spent my life controlling and complying to try and get people to love me. And I realised that this codependent behaviour wasn't just about my marriage. It actually infested every relationship I ever had with anybody in my life. And I understood all of a sudden how I couldn't retain friends, how I was never comfortable in social groupings, you know, how that low self-esteem came up automatically, how I lived my life over-planning and writing scripts for the future and over-reviewing every behaviour I ever had when in interaction with other people and seeing myself as the judge and jury. And it was a really very confronting time for me. Happily, things are a lot better here. So for me, the first step says I'm powerless over that stuff because I tried so hard to change it through willpower and through other resources that I had, and I couldn't. I still had these bouts of anger and whatever. So I came in here and I learned that at the core of all my problems that started way before drug addiction, alcohol or whatever, what I had was childhood trauma that set this up on me. I needed a 12-step program and to work a 12-step program that had actually helped me with this, the core of my problems, rather than other symptoms or manifestations. So look, for me, yeah, look, I'm powerless and my codependent behaviours ruin my relationships with other people and ruin my life and leave me unlovable. I can't fix this by an effort of will because I have tried and I fail. So I need a power greater than myself. I need to connect with that, to open myself to that, to do what I can't do. I can make the commitment to change and have an aspire to change, but I cannot make the change within myself. For me, also, the higher power for me is not in my head. I have to remove the logical and analytical mind completely from my belief in a higher power. And I have to find my higher power in my heart and my experience. But I've got enough experience and I've learned about my heart to see that. And the third step says, I turn my will and my life over. I invoke the help from my higher power. And gradually, my codependent behaviours reduce and damage my life less. And I'm really grateful for the journey and sorry I went slightly over time. Thank you.
I'm Anne, I'm codependent.
Hi.
And I thought, just sitting there, that I would share on how my partner did step one with me. We've been together 28 years. All of our relationship has been about recovery. He does not do recovery work, but every time I do recovery work, he has to change. That's what he's told me. Anyway, with his step one with me, I was doing unmanageability. Everyone was saying, you need to leave the cult. You need to go. This is bad for you. And I'm like, you don't understand anything. I need to get stronger in order to leave. After about 4 years of this, he came to me and he said, I love you. I think you're the most amazing person in the world and you do what you need to do. And for me, everything just dropped away and I was able to step away from that cult with repercussions, but without repercussions of my own making. For me, that was almost like his step one because he loved me without trying to manage me. He had been trying to manage my addiction. He had been trying to make my life better. He had been trying to fix me. And just by that simple admission to me, I was able to let it go. And I just thought it was interesting. That's the other side of step one. So thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Kerry, I'm codependent.
Hi.
I have been sitting here with so much going through my head and it's been really hard to find the clarity to get hold of my thoughts to share, but I was just inspired to share on step one and that whole bit about having the will to want to change. And that was very much me when I came into CODA. I knew that I needed to change. I had tried so hard. I had done therapy probably 3 or 4 different times in my life. And I thought that I was able to make this happen. And what I realized was I just was looking at everybody else around me and expecting them to kind of be able to read what I needed, because as a child I just didn't learn that what was going on for me was important. So I was constantly trying to make sense of the world by looking at others. It went okay. I grew up, I went to university, I got a career, I got married, and even that kind of went okay for the first maybe 10 years. My husband had a really busy, powerful job. We had three children. I pretty much gave up work, stayed home. He traveled a lot, so I can kind of do all my own thing. But then those kids started to get older. In 2015, he took a redundancy and all of a sudden he was around a whole lot more and my life just imploded. Even though I knew that it was partly my responsibility, I kind of blamed him. I blamed the whole, he used to use that. He'd say, we'd have these huge discussions about what we needed to do with the kids and I'd kind of, agree. It all made sense. And then I would go and do the exact opposite. And he would say, this is insane. And oh my God, that word triggered me. I'm like, he's calling me insane. Like that was abusive. It really was insane. And when I came into CODA and I heard that word for the first time, I thought, oh my goodness, this is finally making sense. And it was unmanageable. I couldn't control things. I couldn't. It's almost like a juxtaposition. I looked to everybody else to work out how to behave. But then when they did something that I didn't like, I knew I didn't like it and I wanted to manipulate it and change it. So I guess in learning that I was powerless over myself and I was powerless over everybody else, it kind of gave me that permission to hand it over to a higher power, permission to finally let myself think that there might be something else there and that there's a will for me that I don't have to so tightly cling to and try and control, that I can learn about myself, I can learn about others, I can learn to trust. And that has been the greatest gift of all. Life before I came into CODA had to be perfectly on an even keel for me to be able to cope. Everything had to be going beautifully. And when it didn't, that threw me into unmanageability. And it was such a totally insane to even think that life was ever going to be like that. It sounds so insane as I say it. CODA's given me the tools when life has thrown me, and thankfully life hasn't thrown me the biggest curveballs probably until after I came into CODA, but it's given me the tools to kind of go, this is life. Of course it's messy and it is unmanageable and there's lots of stuff that's going to happen because that's just what life is about. But there are tools and there's a program and there is a community and there is a higher power, and that's going to help me and carry me, and I'll be forever grateful for that. Thank you.
Good afternoon, my name's Guy, codependent. Hopefully a little less codependent than I was this morning. Yeah, look, really grateful to hear the share so far. And look, steps 1, 2, and 3 are the core of this program. As I was saying this morning, when I turned up here in CODA, I knew everything. And my poor sponsor had to knock a whole bunch of this stuff out of my head. Look, I knew I was powerless over people because no one was behaving. No one was doing what I told them to. And no one was taking my advice. So eventually I got it. Okay, well, that's not working. But that my life had become unmanageable. No, I'm fine. You know, it's just everyone else. And one of the things I had to learn is I couldn't keep doing what I'd always been doing and expect things to get different. It just wasn't going to work. And so many of those things were just natural ways I lived. And my sponsor, bit by bit, you know, helped me just start seeing, is that working? Doing that, is that working? Still remember one day we're having this argument. And I said, oh, mate, look, you just want me to do things your way. He says, no, mate, I just don't want you to do them your way. Step 2. My favourite step. My sponsor used to say, okay, what's the last word of the second step? And he'd go, it's sanity. They're not talking about occasional headache or dyspepsia. It's a serious word. And it's not up at step 11. It's not at step 12. Step 2, very early, it says, our thinking is mad. And my thinking will create new versions of what I've always done, explaining to me that I thought I was doing something different. My thinking is not to be trusted. I've got a friend who keeps saying, don't go in there unaccompanied. That's why I've got you guys. That's why I've got outreach calls. I'm thinking of doing this. And the other person going, you're what? You're going to... No, I probably wouldn't do that. Anyhow, that's another gift of recovery, that I don't have to listen to my first thought and I don't have to listen to all that crap that's going on. If you want the worst case scenario of any situation, just plug into my head. It'll come up with them immediately. Step three. I remember my sponsor who sat me down one day and said, okay, so look, we're up to step three. I know you're kind of atheist to whatever degree. What's your idea of a higher power? And I went, at last. He's going to listen to my years of meditational experience, my spiritual development. He really wants to hear what I'm saying. He said, I don't care as long as it's not your thinking. All the people I've sponsored over the years, it's like, I don't care as long as it's not your head. It will be a higher power, whether that's God, whether that's your higher self. But whatever it is, if it's not my thinking, my higher self comes through. You can see with people who've been in 12-step programs a lot, the difference between knowledge and wisdom. You can know stuff. You know, some of those people have been AA in 50 years and they just say things to go, oh my God, that's right. So working through these steps and getting to enough meetings brings magic in my life. It brings miracles. If I get to enough meetings, the government starts making right decisions. The traffic is so much better. And the woman on Telstra just doesn't annoy me. So where would I be anywhere else? Thank you.
Actually, I'm sharing because there's like an order to what I can share rather than being this big flowing blah, blah, blah. So I'll feel a little bit more confident here. So starting with step one, admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, I knew my life was unmanageable. But I didn't realize how much, I could tell by the mess in my room, by the dishes, that's unmanageable, but that's just physical unmanageability. What I really had that was unmanageable was the inability to not keep trying to anticipate how others were viewing me and to manage the catastrophe of what would happen if I didn't do what I believed they wanted me and needed me to do. And so having anyone and everyone that I met, that unmanageability was in my head. It was around, all right, this person, this boss needs this to be done. And if I don't do that, and if I don't do it to this level of performance, catastrophe. My mother needs me to behave, you know, perform a certain way so that she can be calm and feel confident in my capabilities, whatever it is, because my mother's a higher power. So as long as I do these things, she'll be okay. My kids, as long as they won't run into the street and get hit by a car, whatever that is. The catastrophe in my head was around any and every single relationship I had. And I had no idea I had that level of unmanageability going on in my head. That was just like beyond me. And then I came to number two, and this thing about, that's where the insanity is this idea that I am higher power enough to be able to manage all of those situations, all those relationships and everything. So being able to basically believe in a higher power, being able to manage that and manage me and manage that everything's going to be okay, that has been bringing me to sanity. It's allowing people to be what they are. Their opinion of me is none of my business. You know, whether they accept me or not, whether I perform satisfactorily is none of my, you know, that's going to just reveal to me, you know, I don't have the anxiety around those things as much thanks to the program and thanks to my higher power. I can just keep handing it over and handing it over if it is your will. If it is your will, and that brings me back to sanity. The third one, made a decision. Wow. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God. I always have felt like I have a relationship with God, but there are some times I really don't want to make that decision. And oftentimes, since I was in my late teens, I remember having issues with depression. So highs and lows. And I was ashamed of those depressions. I tried to hide it with my mask of everything's fine, we've got this. So I was just performing on the outside and depressed on the inside. The interesting thing is that I feel like I'm understanding now that a lot of times that depression was coming from my lack of a desire to hand everything over to my higher power. And it was my way of saying, I'm not satisfied. I'm not happy with the way all of these things are. And I'm not, people aren't behaving the way I want them to behave. And I'm a victim. And this is horrible. This isn't the situation I want to be in. And I'm uncomfortable and I'm mad. And I, before CODA, I couldn't acknowledge when I was mad because I didn't, those feelings weren't okay. Being mad wasn't okay. So I never expressed it to myself or anyone. Making a decision, as someone else said, is an option. But for me, making a decision to turn my will and my life over to my higher power is the equivalent of saying, what is the truth? What is the truth of my situation? When I'm depressed, the last time I got depressed, I was able to ask, what is the truth of this situation, this feeling? I've never been interested in knowing the truth. It scared me. And when I became willing and I made a decision to ask that question of my higher power, my higher power came back to me in that moment and he said, you have more faith in your failures than you have in me. And the minute I got that answer back, I was unable to release my fear of failure, my fear of not being enough, and hand it back to the truth, which is I have a loving higher power and I am enough. I'm a precious creation of God. And I was set free. In that moment, all of a sudden, wow, is it that easy to make a decision? And it was awesome. So I couldn't get there without this program. I can't. I have to make this decision every day, every moment, sometimes more times than others. So thanks.
Hey friends, my name's Marco, grateful codependent. Reflecting on my childhood, it was all about feeling safe. And so I grow up and I come into adulthood and suddenly I realize that on reflection that my peace was defined by your reaction to what was going on. Peace was defined by your approval of me. My peace was defined by me avoiding your disapproval. My peace was defined by you liking me. I have no balance. And so what happened with me is I found that my illness, if I use that word, told me that if I can just control the situation as I did as a five-year-old and a six-year-old by avoiding mom and dad's wrath and judgment, if I can control the situation, then I'll be safe. And so I start to control you and try and control what you do or what you don't do. But also I start to think that I need to take on all your stuff. So if you are sad, it's my duty to feel sad as well. Otherwise, I'm a bad person. And so I'm this adult thinking, well, I can't be unmanageable because I'm working. I'm not in jail. I'm paying my taxes and I live in a home and I'm ticking boxes, right? But mentally, I never have any peace of mind. Like my mind is just always, always, always running. It's like the committee in my head. There's 60 people there all the time. I'm debating them. And you would think that if I was running the debate, when I win the argument, I would feel calm, serene, and loving. But I'm left feeling very agitated and very resentful that no one does what I think they should do. And I had to get to that point of surrender where I realized it was just, my life was unmanageable. That point of surrender where I come to believe that something outside of me, I need to get something into me that can give me that moment of sanity. And what is the sanity for me was, I don't need to control your stuff. The sanity is understanding that it's actually none of my business. But it was my business as a kid because I had to be involved, otherwise I was going to get into trouble. But as an adult, it's none of my business what you are doing or not doing. But I had to suffer a lot of mental pain to be able to surrender, despite, you know, ticking all the other boxes. And eventually I get to that decision that, Marco, you've got to stop playing God. You've got to stop playing the judger, the arbiter. You've got to stop playing the person who knows everything for everyone. You just let the world operate on its own. For me, the word that was emphasized is that I turn my will and my life, my thinking, my action over to the care of something outside of myself. Do you know, Marco, yes, despite running your life as a kid, always fearing the worst, maybe there's a way that you turn over to the care that things will just work out the way they are meant to. And things will work out for the good. I'd never had that as a kid, as a 5, 6, 7-year-old. Just leave it over to the care of mom and dad. It was always, yes, but. And as an adult to go, it's okay. Life has its way of just running itself. You don't need to be involved in it. You need to partake in it, but you don't have to control it. And that's been the big lesson for me about taking part, but being unattached to the outcome so that my peace is not defined by what I perceive to be the right answer, whatever that is. And therein lies my insanity, knowing what the right answer is. So just grateful to be here, and thanks for a lovely day. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Margot, and I'm codependent in recovery. I just really wanted to share up here, and I was about to share in the last meeting, and then we came to the end. I was like, oh, so then, okay, better share. I would like to share in this meeting. But the things that I wanted to reflect on or share on was just around characteristics, and two things that came to mind was, one, I have a fear of speaking up, and fear of somebody else's anger. I think that definitely comes down to, in my family of origin, my father really had a temper and got really angry. And so when I asked for other needs to be met from my mother as well, I was shut down and told, what's wrong with you? And so I learned from a young age, if I didn't want anger or I didn't want to be something wrong with me for voicing my needs, I'd just shut up. And so in CODA, what I've had to learn is to bite my tongue around giving advice and around that stuff, and to open my mouth around voicing my needs and wants. So it's like in reverse of what I learned when I was a child, and I'm getting better at it. But I do still, sometimes with my family of origin, I find myself just opening my mouth. But it's okay because I'm a work in progress, and progress, not perfection. It's okay because my high power constantly gives me, as each new day comes, a new opportunity to try something a different way. Yeah, so recently I had a situation at work where I was in a freeze mode, and I was just really terrified of this person. I couldn't even ask them to just turn the music down a little bit. On their music was blaring out of their headphones in this work environment because I was scared of her anger. One thing that I've learned in CODA, of many things, but it's about reparenting. And so being in recovery, I have the gift of stepping away and reflecting and going, okay, I can reparent that little Margot inside and say, it's okay, you know, it's okay. She's not going to hurt you or harm you or anything. And just to wrap my arms around myself, just to love myself, and also to lean on my higher power and to pray for courage. Just to step two, I came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, and nothing bad's going to happen. And then if I speak up, whatever the outcome, just let go and let God and hand it over to my higher power. And by doing these new behaviours, I actually build up my self-esteem and I feel good about myself, which is another area which I've learnt to work on in my recovery, to build up my self-esteem, because that is an area that I can really identify with as well. And yeah, when I do those things, I feel better about myself, and I can hold my head up high and I can stand up tall and I grow. I'm really grateful to be here and to hear all I've heard today, and thanks very much.
This brings us to the end of sharing time. Thank you to all who shared and those who shared by listening. Tradition 12 reminds us that CODA is an anonymous program. Whom we see here, what we hear here, when we leave here, we let it stay here. We will now close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.